The reporters are, I have heard it.
Sunset illness state.
Yeah. Also. Capitalizes.
Capitalizes for sale.
Capitalizes for sale.
STING.
Oh, Steve. That's Steve.
All right.
It was working.
That's not.
I was there.
Automatic repairs are broken. It's always done this stuff. And so on. I'll try to keep up with you and have.
Hopefully without getting stuff off.
Good. Buyers. That's good. Yes, that's true. So my dog went to on this kitchen.
It's a year to be done.
Yes, you do.
I took part in that session.
I saw that.
Sometimes they just ask the information. You send them something that has to be in person. The way your own decisions are, if it's important, everybody pushing on their side.
Do we have anyone on the phone? Okay, I don't think we can.
Yeah,
my mom's phone.
Right.
Amazing how that works.
We are one member short of quorum, so we're going to give a couple more minutes, see if we don't get someone on the phone or another attendee that's
This is Gordon Wishon. I'm on the
phone. Oh, hey, Gordon.
Oh,
Good.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to turn you up. Hang on just a second.
Okay.
Thank you, Gordon.
Thanks, Gordon.
Sure.
I think we are good then. All right. Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. And we'll start with a roll call, please.
Okay, Todd Bright.
Here.
David Byers.
Stuart Spooner here for David Byers.
Eddie Cook.
Here.
Peter Graves. Dan Mazzola. Gilbert Arancha. Michael Dogg.
Present.
Morgan Reed.
Here.
David L. Stevens.
Here.
Gordon Wishon.
Here.
J.R. Sloan.
Present.
Senator Don Shooter. Richard Stavniak.
Hi. I'm here for Richard.
Thank you. Representative David Stevens. Quorum is present.
All right, thank you. No follow-up items from our last meeting. So with that, we'll move forward to approval of the meeting minutes. We had some minor grammatical
editorial.
That is really just about the present, past versus present tense or future tense in some of our verbiage with that. There were only one or two edits like that. So with that, we would contain a motion for approval of the prior meeting minutes.
So moved.
Do you have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. First item for review on our agenda is Arizona State Retirement System. And I'll turn it over to James Dean.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is James Dean. I'm one of the ADOA Asset Engagement Managers, and I will let the gentleman from ASRS introduce themselves.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kent Smith. I'm the CIO at the Arizona State Retirement System. We're here today to update you on a project that you all approved last year in April. It's a benefits disbursement project. The purpose of the project was to change vendors that were processing our pension payroll and bring some of the reporting capabilities that they were providing in-house. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brandon Heathcott. He's the project manager and scrum manager on the project. So I'm going to turn it over to him and let him take you through the presentation.
Okay. As Ken mentioned, a couple years ago, the ASRS went through a CEM evaluation on our costs and an attempt to make the agency more cost efficient. One of the primary reasons is the amount that we spend on third party to do our payment of pensions, forfeitures, survivor benefits. And so this project was designed to bring a lot of that, a lot of the administrative part of the process in-house. We will still use the state bank, which for disbursement, which is Bank of America, to do the actual payments. But we will be handling the transmission of files, setup, and printing checks, that sort of things that is currently being done for us that we're paying for. Okay. Like I said, moving away to disbursement, related functionality. And so some of this is the back office thing, calculation and payment of taxes, payment dues and levies. To the third-party agencies and printing checks, as I mentioned. So that's the main goal of the project. Some of the benefits right now, because we have a third-party doing this, our pension process has to run earlier in the month so that we can send it to our bank, our custodial bank, and they can go through and reconcile to the information they store, and we can reconcile as well. Once we bring that in-house, we're gonna gain several days back in our process. And this will eliminate the need to keep a lot of those records at a third-party bank. So right now, we are sending what we call changes only, each month for our pensions, and so all of that information being stored externally, that won't happen in our new process. And we're going, right now we have a custom format of our files we send back and forth. We move away from that to the standard notch format. That means that it will be much easier for us to switch banks if necessary anytime in the future. We broke the project down into five phases, trying to get the most important things done first, how to generate payments and create EFT files. That part of the project was completed on time in March, and now we're working on being able to go print checks, being able to receive information back from the bank and update our payment status so that we can properly display that. That is planned to be done again in March, although at the rate we're going, we're likely to finish a little bit early. I can't really tell because we have an enormous amount of testing still to go through. The remaining phases have to do the account reconciliation phase, a lot of our internal processing and reconciling reporting that we do. We have to redo a lot of our reports to have this new payment structure. And then we have to finish up the able to pay third parties frauds. And then the last part is to do the tax records. We're doing a lot of the tax calculation and payment now, but we have to do all of the records in 1099s. So that's the final part. Most of this will not be implemented until we actually switch banks. The target date for that is still 1-1 of 2019. We have to do it in a calendar year to start a calendar year for 1099 reporting. We have put some things in. We've changed the way we generate PDFs for payment advices on the website, the way our retirees, anybody else who's gotten a check from us, can go and see what their check was. And we're not using State Street Bank to generate PDFs and send them to us so we can upload them to the website to handle all that internally. So that's the only part that we've actually implemented so far. This was sort of general. This is what was allocated for resources and funding. None of that has changed since the initial approval of the project. We are running a little bit lower. We're using less consultants than we had originally anticipated.
Any questions?
So, real quick, Mr. Chairman, for the first question, just to let everybody know, the reason why ASRS is here is there's an ITAT condition that was placed on the project that they present yearly for the project. So this is their one-year update. So they will be back next year, but that is the purpose of today. So sorry about that.
Sorry, Tom. Mr. Chair, question related to we've got an incremental project here, we're rolling out the five phases. I noticed like the tax return or the tax forms were on the last phase. I'm assuming we're using tax forms from the current system until that's done?
Okay. Yes, we're not changing the tax forms until the end because technically we don't have to. When we roll out in the beginning of 2019, we won't have to provide any new 1099s until the end of 2019. So that part will take place after the implementation of all the rest.
In the meantime, tax forms
we can continue to be generated by State Street Bank.
That's it. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Heathcott, you mentioned that the records are currently stored externally. I'm assuming that at the end of a contract period, those are either going to be destroyed or returned to us. What's your plan for getting back those records that are stored by third party right now?
As far as I know, we've not talked about that.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that, but we would expect that they would destroy them.
There'll be, I think, about a six-month period when they still have to support anything that comes in, specifically checks that might go stale. So they'll probably continue to have that information for 6 months after we implement.
Okay, this term is an unknown, it doesn't rise to the level of any kind of concern, but just that the records be taken into consideration in the post-implementation process. It's got to be done. Thanks. Questions, Mr. Chairman?
As it relates to the eventual formal solution, I'm assuming the current vendor provides some type of an SLA as it relates to the
Gordon, we're going to go ahead and turn off the phone. If you can call us back, we will open up the break in just a minute. We just had a fire alarm.
Keep it interesting. All right, well, since we confirmed we all know how to get out of a room when we're asked to, and I think everyone's had the opportunity to make it back at this point, we'll try to pick back up on where we were, which I think
Mr. Cook, I believe, was.
Yeah, it was in the midst of a question that was bound to be a good one.
Well, you know, my advanced age, I forget, you know, sometimes what I'm going to ask. Anyways, my question to the team, the third-party vendor that's been providing a service for a while obviously has an agreement with the state as it relates to the service level agreement and so forth. And my question was, I was looking at the column of risk as it relates to the solution coming in-house and your teams being able to provide it. And I'm a little bit, you know, concerned in reading that, because my question would be, as you build the service level agreement internally to provide the same level, how much more cost do you anticipate as it relates to different individuals that you need to hire, or additional infrastructure to provide for backup and recovery? I just don't know the magnitude of what might be coming in the future as this thing gets rolled out over 5 years. Because I saw the $1 million saving annually, but then does it go right back into a bucket to hire and backfill and provide other additional infrastructure? I don't know.
No, the intent is to have a significant amount of automation so that just a fraction of the increase of works with one person or two people. As far as disaster recovery, there's, I believe, about $400,000 or something like that.
Yes, it's hardware.
For hardware. And that's about it.
Are there any other questions?
Can we ask a question of staff, I guess, at this point?
I want to ask Gordon real quick. Gordon, did you have any questions?
No questions here, thank you.
Okay, thanks. You have a question for staff?
Yeah, for staff, is there anything in the monitoring of this project that you think ITAC should be aware of after a year?
As of right now, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vernon, no. Right now, with the regular status reports we get from ASRS and understanding their development methodology and how they're working, as right now we see no issues or concerns as it pertains to this project or any others.
Thank you.
All right, if there's no further questions, James, back to you. Is there any action? Was what, just other information?
Just an information item based upon the condition of the pitch.
All right. Kent, thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to our next item on our agenda, which is the Arizona Appropriation Commission and Incorporated Software Replacement Project.
Under
Chairman, members of the committee. The Arizona Corporation Commission approves and maintains all corporation limited liability company records, and by statute makes those records available to the public. The current system in use was implemented in 1993. It's difficult to manage and requires excessive resources to adjust how the application works to be in compliance with any changes in statute. So the commission is proposing today to purchase a commercial off-the-shelf application and host it within their current Microsoft Azure cloud environment. To the right, I'll let the member of the Corporation Commission who is here to introduce herself.
Hello, yes, my name is Letty Butner, and I'm the CIO of the Corporation Commission.
So with that, Asset is recommending that the pitch be approved without conditions, but for the current moment, I'll turn it back over to Letty to provide her presentation.
Okay, so I'm going to go over the purpose why I'm here, which James already said nicely, but I'll say it again. I'll go over the background in terms of the problems we've been facing and why we need to replace this application. I'm going to discuss our proposed solution, the cost, and schedule and risk. And can you hear me okay on the phone?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Thank you.
All right, so we're here to obtain ratification for, as James mentioned, getting a COT solution to replace the current software that we use for corporation and LLC. The tasks that we do there, we handle name reservation, registration, maintenance of corporations and LLC through their entire life cycle, including the dissolution thereof. And to give you some perspective of how much data and volume that we currently have about 890,000 active entities. That's our name for corporations and LLCs in our system. And last fiscal year, we do have some e-filing now. We took in 161,000 e-filings, and we get about, on average, 30,000 paper documents submitted per month. Okay, so our need is great. So that's basically because this system is extremely old. It was essentially ramped up in 1993. It's on a very old system called Progress, and that has not been upgraded over the years. It has a limited set of licenses. It's impossible to do an upgrade. It's a totally different product now. You can't upgrade to the new version of Progress. It's essentially its own database and programming language. It uses something called WebSpeed. The closest analogy to us old timers is COBOL. It's like that, okay? It's high maintenance. We have to extend the data tables by hand, for example. Most recent request for what I would think is a simple report took one of my programmers 2 weeks, and he had to write 26 different routines to get all the data to simply say, how many new filings were there last month, and how many companies are in good standing and things like that. So it's high maintenance for us. We have to watch it all the time because of the limited licenses. So we have to watch for too much volume. We have up to 20,000 sessions per day, not on Saturday and Sunday, but during the week. And there may be as many as 300 or more simultaneous users. And we're doing more than just accepting filings. People are doing searches or looking for names. They want to register for their company. So we're doing a lot of transactions online through this system. Okay? And internally, it's a very, again, antiquated system. It's character race driven. I'll show you a slide on what it looks like in a second here. But it's the cumbersome older way of doing things. You have to memorize all the shortcut keys and so forth. Okay? And also, another dilemma is that it's in its current state, it always has to be on site with me because it's on Windows 2003 server. This is a 32-bit app. I can't move it or try. It won't work. So it's on that, and as you know, Windows, Microsoft no longer supports that version. Okay, to the green screen, it's a blue screen. So, but it probably looks familiar to some of you. So this is an example of a WorkCube screen. And this is actually all public data, but as a courtesy, I blurred out the names of corporations and so forth. But this is what our internal staff works with. As another example, we were recently doing a lean project in this area, and I can't even pull data on who has been assigned it and how long they took to process it. I cannot provide that data through this antiquated system. Okay? So that was what it looks like internally. All right. So what are the benefits of replacing this system? So we need to achieve 100% online filing capability. This is something the public wants. It will help with our turn time, our processing time, where sometimes it becomes quite, you know, lengthy. And we have to offer expedites, you know, for people who are in a time crunch trying to get these things through. So we want to have 100% filing. I can't do it with that system because of all those limitations. And I did do some because we wanted to prove to everyone that we're going to get a lot of benefit from replacing this and doing more online work. One of the big benefits is the reject rates will go down. So although the corporation division has done extensive work to simplify these filing documents as much as possible, people will make mistakes on these. So the reject rates on some of these is as high as 28%. So imagine filling that out, coming all the way downtown across the street over here, and you turn it in and pay, and then we turn around later and tell you you're rejected. Please make these changes. Comes back in the queue. So we're saying that's how much rework we can get. And so when we recently in September did online LLC filings, we saw that drop 50%, okay, on the LLC filing rate. And that wasn't even with doing all the type of automation we really could do to do all the checking, you know, that we could. So we will see a reduction in our workload. We will see an improvement in the time it takes for someone to get their corporation or LLC registered. Okay? And if you're wondering, well, how did I do it on this old system? Why did I need to replace it? I just did something last year. I kind of tricked it. I saved the part of the data and updated it at night when there aren't a lot of people online. And that's not a sustainable solution, right? Can't do that across all your filings. Okay. Next is we know the product that we're recommending, proposing, has much better work queue features. You can assign, you can escalate, and so forth. So that's going to be a big win for us in terms of the capability for our internal users. And then really knowing who's performing well, right? Coaching them to do better and so on and so forth. Okay. Another nice feature of this product that we have wanted is you register and create an account. So we see that as something that's pragmatic to protect identities. Right now, you could technically file something for someone else's company, right? There's nothing preventing you to do that otherwise, other than you're gonna have to pay us to do it. Right, so we want to prevent those kinds of things, okay? And then, you know, we've always had these risks. I've told you how much we have to monitor. These can cause periodic outages. You know, last year we dealt a lot with scraping, which then ties up the license when someone's just trying to hit us, you know, which we've pretty effectively blocked now, but there's those kinds of challenges. We even sometimes if the workload in externally is high, we have to tell the internal users who also take up those licenses, who often try to do two sessions to try to be more productive, to close one of them because we need the public to be able to do what they need to do. So that's what we deal with today, right? And occasionally we see a lost transaction that we can't explain when we get payments back from the bank. Okay, so not a whole lot there, but enough to be an annoyance or concern, right? And it means that basically you have to go and talk to that person. So you know who it was, but you end up having to contact them. So it's just more work you end up having to do. Okay? So these things would either be in place, right? The positive ones and the negative ones will go away. Okay. So do I have any questions?
They have them.
Okay, do you have any questions before I go into the proposed solution?
Mr. Chairman? Letty, you mentioned that the current platform's on Windows 2003, which is no longer supported. Is all the data in the public record, or are there security concerns?
It's actually all public record, and your organization reviewed that. We had an exchange on what type of data we have, and your response came back that none of it is. I thought maybe one type was, and you confirmed it's not. Okay. All right. So our proposed solution is to purchase a software called Sinuity from the PCC Technology Group, as well as purchase their professional services in order to configure that product and migrate our current data to it. And we would do that through statewide contract. Okay, this company is the leader in this area, and they have done 7 states, most recently Indiana and Georgia with their last 2. Indiana just came live a couple of months ago. And we've done extensive market research in this area. We, back in 2014, had released an RFI to see what was out there. And last year, we actually even had prepared an RFP, and it was actually published, but we didn't get funding that year. And so it was canceled, okay? So we've done our homework in terms of requirements and seeing, you know, the products that are available. And I can tell you that it's a pretty limited set. A lot of RFI responses were, I want to build it for you responses. So. And we also talked directly to Indiana and Georgia about their implementations, how they went, how responsive this company is. And Georgia was implemented in 11 months, and Indiana was 14 months. They described the company as very good to work with, extremely responsive. I, in particular, asked them a lot about how good are they after you go live. Georgia, in particular, because Indiana has probably gone live. And they described them as very responsive and catching up, you know, always meeting their statute change requirements. Okay? We also considered building a solution ourselves with contractor support. Why? Because we had already invested some changes on the front end. The front end is not a blue screen. We had changed that prior. Really what it came down to is this product with their last 2 implementations, some gaps that we had seen like in that 2014, they're gone. The product looks fabulous, truly, and it's going to meet our needs. So we'd like to go with that to minimize our risk. Okay? And this is what, if you are registered in Indiana, this slide shows you what you would get. So I registered, and so it's an empty dashboard. I didn't try to obviously put a company in, but you can get a sense for what I'm talking about, okay? So modern look and feel. In fact, they can customize their look to my look, because I want to keep it integrated, front end across everything we do to the public, and they can do that. So our colors, and we actually already look a lot like this for other things that we do in terms of the technology. And it's on the same technology that we use, ASP.NET, that's what we're doing, Microsoft, that's what we, for anything in-house, already do. Okay, and so this just kind of just shows that you'll end up being able to see whatever filings that you've done. You can see what was rejected. You can see what payments occurred, you know, by you. So you'll have a dashboard. You could even, in this case, I don't know that we would do it, but you can watch other businesses and see what is being done there. Sometimes for groups that do a lot of work for multiple business filings, because that's their function, like features like that. So that's what that product looks like. Okay, so the second part, so I told you the software part in terms of hosting. On this next slide here, we're going to do it in Microsoft Azure, and it will be done by us, the ACC. We are already have an Azure Government Cloud instance. We've been, and we're not done yet. So when I get to the cost slide, I'm doing what I believe is the worst case cost, because I should get some leverage when I'm fully in there myself, which I'm not yet, because you'll see I have some work to do jointly with ADOA to get there. It will be there, and it basically, the cost estimates that you will see were based on what the PCC technology group indicated for us to assume, such as two app servers, right? And they host for others, so this should be accurate. And I actually asked them to give me a quote of what if you did it. And just the pure Azure cost versus my calculation and theirs was almost identical, except if they host, they'll charge me a lot more because they want to manage it, right? And it doesn't make sense for my scenario where I'm going to be cloud. So that's why we're proposing this. Okay. So any questions there on the proposed solution before I go over the cost? Yes, Mr. Trevor.
Go ahead, Tom.
Lenny, the one you mentioned the budget, you're going to go into that. You requested a budget appropriation, and apparently that was turned down.
That was 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
We went back this past year, and we have been approved for $2 million.
Received $2 million for 17.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And secondly, you mentioned you went down a procurement path with an RFP, and that was canceled because of the budget. Now you have funding. Is this going to be through an RFP process, or is there another procurement method? You mentioned state contract.
It will be a state contract.
Which is,
well, we're working with SPO directly on that.
We're talking about the Dell software and the Knowledge Services contract?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Brown, so basically what they're doing is they're leveraging the existing soft value-added reseller for the software piece, and any other actual services that need to be done can either be done through Knowledge Services, that contract, or through the same procurement method as the software SPO is working with them. If they were to go through RFP, none of these numbers would have been made public, and neither would the selection have been made. But all the procurement rules are being followed, very much so. Lenny's been working with DOA procurement, I believe, directly through on this, right?
Yes.
Through the head of our technology procurement office, everything to make sure everything is above board.
Makes sense. It just confused me. Sorry, Mr. Chair. It just confused me when we went down the RFP process and now you're not.
Right, right. The reason we had done RFP before is we were interested, based on the RFI, of possibly having a custom one. So it was not cost at that time. And now we want to just be cost.
Makes sense.
Okay. Thank you. So the cost slide here is the professional outside services. So the proposed timeline that you'll see on upcoming slides is for approximately 11 months. So most of the monies will get spent in fiscal year 2017, the remaining in 2018. And that would be the year that the maintenance starts, right, in year two. So the actual software cost is the next line for the 277 and change, okay, right? And you see the licensing and maintenance fees, it's about $89,000 per year. And that's my approximation based on their recommendation for the setup for the hosting costs, and that's additive to my own current costs. Okay, so then you see the total is actually over the $2 million appropriation that I indicated that we received. And so you can see that most of that difference is the hosting, right? Some of the maintenance. So the Corporation Commission will have no problem out of our own budget making up that difference. We will not ask for any more funding. We will, you know, just be using the $2 million appropriation. So any questions on my class? Yes.
I have a question. A couple months ago, we had another presentation of another project where they decided to use Amazon Web Services as their hosting.
Yeah.
My question is, why not use them? Because they do offer a GovCloud solution. And
yes.
So I'm kind of curious, did you go out and price out the two? And I'd love to hear what your answer is on that.
I actually didn't price the Amazon. I am committed to the Microsoft platform and all the products that we're doing. The price we got from Microsoft, I felt was competitive, affordable for us. We're doing all Hyper-V. In actuality, because I have a lot of old products, I'm hybrid, right? And I don't want to pass along as a legacy what I feel I inherited, which is not keeping up. And I know you can just put just about anything over in the Amazon cloud, but I want to be revving to the Microsoft requirements, which are a little more stringent, to keep up with technology. I think that's personally the right thing to do. And so that's why we went with the Azure.
And I appreciate that answer, but I think as it relates to a standard as a policy, I think if we're looking at, you know, external clouds as a platform, I'm not sure I agree with your answer.
Okay.
Because
I
do know that AWS will support, you know, many hypervisors that are out there. And I appreciate your commitment and your support of Microsoft, but I would say I would like to have a look at the other, you know, clouds that are out there and just get a competitive look. And if they meet the requirements, you know, I'm open to, you know, going to that platform.
Yeah. The other consideration there is I did share in a previous slide on an Office 365. There's some considerations with AD and their, you know, how you go through races, you know, Office 365 from our perspective. But yeah, so I brought these other products. I can tell you when I did those actions, I consulted with AOA on what are your vetted, you know, providers. I looked at joining the Office 365, you know, contract with the state. The one directly from Microsoft was more affordable. But yeah, so any other questions?
PCT or PCC Tech obviously seems to be the leader. Are there other comparable options too, or are we pretty tied into this vendor as a our only option really to go with? We know since there's some sex or some success
for R5. I believe R5 is the information community. I don't quite believe there's any issues with that.
Okay. Another one that we felt was affordable is called Tecuity. But they have not had, there's only about two states on it, and they have not had anyone join them in recent years. From our perspective, it felt like a risk. Where there's some nice features in the product, absolutely. But again, this is what we felt based on our analysis that is the most risk-free with the best match to our requirements.
And as an add-on to that too, where's the line between support? So they install it, maintenance, what is covered under that, and do you expect the reduction in current support needed to maintain what we have in place today?
Sure. I do have that at the end in terms of risk, right, is that is our IT group no longer be doing all the management that we do today. And they offer, and I'll highlight it again when I get there, their service level agreement includes 480 hours. It's bug fix, enhancements, that sort of thing. And when I get there, I'll explain what kind of level of change that we have year to year to put that in perspective in terms of the risk there. Proceed. Okay, so the schedule that PCC has proposed based on our requirements on the statement of work, and this is assuming September kickoff, so as I indicated, it's about 11 months. So I already did the high level, kind of more compact summary of the schedule versus the more detailed one in the statement of work. But basically, this is a company that, this schedule will look to you more like waterfall. And that's really just because it's a project where we're having to do data migration, an old system, and you can't partially launch anything in this scenario. But they are an agile methodology company. So initially, they would be on-site full time, that's the level of commitment they also want from us, right? Doing their requirements and gap analysis of our needs compared to their product capability. And then it would be broken up into the three pieces, the online external facing mock-up configuration screen portion. Then the in-house requirements, right, replacing those blue screens that I showed you earlier. And then lastly, the administrative reporting, and administrative also includes the financial. So it would be broken up in that buckets of work. And then starting next year, they would, if there was any custom coding, which in the pitch I estimated, you know, at about 10 to 15%, based on what I was seeing there. They've got a bit of gap on the financial part, for example, because we do a few unique things there. So, but that would start for the online part, then the in-house, the admin and reporting. The next slide shows that as soon as, because that's an April date, as soon as that online part is done, walkthroughs through it, review, right, tweaking would begin, and follow on as each of the other pieces is completed. And then that's already going to include testing, and then two cycles of UAT. And then they would do the training, you know, development, and then we have the training sessions followed by the go live, okay? And you're wondering where is the data migration? It's on the next slide. So this company, when they've done these implementations, starts right away. So as soon as the project starts, they want to start on the data mapping. There would then be an exception analysis as they start working on scripting. The actual LEN scripting unit test would be through from February through May. And then we go through numerous data conversion test cycles to make sure that data lands correctly. So that's the high level schedule. Again, I told you two examples of a Georgia with 11 months and Indiana with 14. I think this is somewhat aggressive, but when you see the compares to actual recent implementations, it's reasonable that it should land in similar time. Example like the Indiana, they have many of the same rules as us, like 120 days, name reservations, and things of that nature. So, you know, these types of activities across state have a lot of commonality. Any question on schedule? Okay. Okay, so my last slide here is on risk. And in this particular area, it was what was asked earlier. I know as the IT, CIO, my concern was heavily on the fact that my group would no longer be maintaining the software as we do today. Because we do get every year, something comes up through the legislature where we need to make changes. And so as I mentioned, the SLA would, for the cost that I indicated earlier, would include 480 hours per year for configuration and enhancement requests. There are typically 2 to 4 changes required each year, so we're not like used to work at CTS for the Superior Court, and we had hundreds of changes every year, massive amounts of changes, right, based on legislative and other changes. That's not what this product is. You're smiling at me, Stuart. And so in that respect, it's manageable, but we do occasionally, and we had that happen over the last couple years where something more substantial is asked for. So the most recent one was to have last 90-day rolling new filings posted on the internet, searchable by county, that kind of thing. I know that will take my own resources in the current product, about 3 months. So then you're getting to the border of this. So I would foresee there'll be some years where there'll be some cost that I can't predict because I don't know what the legislative change would be that would go past this need. But we would do what we always do every legislative session. We're routinely asked to indicate whether there'll be a cost to us to implement. We would then have to cost it through a third party, but we would be responding in the same way, making sure that that's understood what any proposed changes are in terms of cost to the public, right? So so that I would judge as a risk, but not a high risk, because we don't have that many changes, right? But it is there. The last one is just that in order to have the full Azure implementation, we need work to be completed. And the main part of that is the completion of infrastructure that we're working on with ADOA. And so that's to be able to have the bandwidth and get out through the state firewall for the kind of, again, volume that we're needing for this product. And the actual Microsoft services, they're pretty much there. It's just in the meantime right now, they don't have like their full AD capability through Office 365 to get around this problem. So it's more like I have a problem implementing my other projects until I get that second part done and capability that normally would be there in the commercial cloud isn't there in the government cloud to kind of have this workaround through Office 365. So that's what that part is. But and so our goals there are for September to do the first part of that, and the next month do the second part. And in the meantime, based on the architecture description we've been given, we can host the development work on site with the capacity we currently have. But obviously, the sooner I have this working, that I know it would be fast enough to go out to the cloud here, the better off I would be. So that is a risk to call out.
Mr. Chairman, I ask a question.
Yes, sir.
Given the fact that you're going to pick a piece of software, that would imply that you're going to do business the way the software drives you to do business. What's the commitment level of your business leadership to change the business process to match what that off-the-shelf software does?
Certainly, yeah. It's a very valid question. And what I've had multiple times with our corporation's director, because you're absolutely right. And so we are very willing to change our processes. For example, I mentioned some financials that maybe would need that. I'm hoping we can simply stop doing some of the things that we do. So one of the things we do that's unusual is something called a money on deposit account. It would be a lot easier to just simply get rid of that. She's very open to doing that. So we know that we need to do this well, on time, and we are flexible to make changes in what we do now to accommodate parts of the product. Where we can't obviously accommodate is if the statute says I examine, then I examine. Although even there, in fact, in our upcoming, our executive director, Jody Jarrett, she's asked at our next director meeting in August that we all come with any proposals on statute changes for the upcoming cycle that we feel would enhance making our businesses more simple, right? Because there's certainly things that we have to do simply because it's in the statute and we're required to do it. So, including offering paper filings, you know. So,
well, as you're aware from working at the courts, when you show 2 to 3 changes a year and then you implement a new system, there will not be 2 to 3 changes a year. Suddenly, your users who have a customized system today are going to point out all those deficiencies that the off-the-shelf system has, and it will go up to 20 or 30 or 40 per year.
Sure.
You've got the advantage, though, in this case, of not having funding to be able to actually implement all those changes, because all those will have to be bid by the vendor and so forth. So it may take care of itself, but just I would add that risk onto your risk chart that you're actively managing, that users are going to have a demand or an appetite for change that you don't have the funding for and the vendor, you know, you really don't want the vendor to do for the health of the project.
Correct.
Just an observation.
Yes. Mr. Chair, there's a question. It looks like PCC Technology was recently purchased by another company earlier this year, GCR.
Yes.
Now, I have no idea why they purchased them, because I'm just thinking about the viability, longevity of PCC Technology. Maybe their product wasn't making enough revenue for them. I have no idea. Do you have any data that shows that GCR is committed to this company as part of a subsidiary to them so that there is some longevity, or are they going to cut this up into little pieces? Because there may be a risk here that their product wasn't doing very well in the industry. So I have no idea.
I don't know that. We asked for another demo, right, of this product recently, and they self made us aware, right, that they had been purchased. They presented it to us as that company wanted to increase their product suite and include the kind of capabilities that PCC was offering. So beyond that, I cannot tell you more. And obviously, that's a self-disclosure by a company that's, of course, in their best interest to say that they're doing great, right? But, any other follow-up?
Well, again, I'm just asking because I don't know the viability of PCC Technology if it stood alone, if they were at risk financially. That's the reason why GCR purchased it. I don't know.
Yeah. I have to ask a question.
Right, they put them up for sale. I don't know how their history has been. Okay. You know, and so
forth. I need to ask if I can make a statement on that or not.
In a public session.
It's a good question because I'm not sure once they're canceled, if everything that was, I think once a procurement is canceled, everything that was submitted becomes public record, correct, on our website? It'd be crazy.
Yeah,
we can provide the answer to you that I think will satisfy your answer.
Yes.
Unfortunately, because just to be mindful of the old RFP and the procurement rules, we'd have to double check with SPO before we can provide that information to you.
Then I probably will motion a continuance of this particular agenda item
for that, as well as my question relating to the pricing between Azure and AWS, because I'm just, as CIO Butner said, she feels is competitive, but there wasn't really any check there.
So,
the pricing. So
I believe I'm able to say is I've seen some financial information. I'm not sure that I'm allowed to say so in this meeting, but I've definitely seen financial information that I'm satisfied with, that SPO was satisfied with regarding this company. But I'm not, as far as I know, I don't think I'm allowed to say that out loud, any specifics thereof.
I always want to be on the side of cautious more than anything else.
Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chair, one more comment, buddy. If the appropriation is one time for fiscal year 17 for the $2 million, and the project is looking to bleed over at 18 anyway, I want to look at that, if it's make that reverting or ask for it to be rolled over to 18 as well.
No, 2 years.
Yeah, the appropriation was appropriated for multiple years, so it stands out, will not expire in FY 17.
Any other questions? Gordon, want to make sure I give you the opportunity. You have a question?
No, I appreciate that. I don't think I have any questions.
Okay. Are for the questions? I'll hand back over to you, James.
There are no conditions at this time that were presented with the pitch, so we were just calling motion to approve the pitch as is.
Okay. So at this time, the chair will entertain a motion for action with regards to this proposal.
Mr. Chair, I would like to provide a motion of continuance as it relates to some of the information in the chat to possibly the next meeting.
Okay. Any discussion around that?
I'll second that. Second.
Okay. Then I will, I guess all those in favor of that?
Aye.
Okay. So, do you need any clarification?
Yes.
James, Letty, do you require any clarification on what's being asked for here?
No, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. So, per Mr. Cook's continuance, so the recommendation or the request is one, to do a cost analysis between what Corporation Commission is doing between Azure and find out how much it would cost to host in the Amazon cloud. That's item number one. Item number two is you would like confirmation on the longevity of the product that's being purchased, since the company in question now has been purchased by another company.
That's correct.
And that's item number two. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. Next item on our agenda is an informational item. This is an update from the Department of Child Safety with regards to the Guardian program.
DCS is here to do an informational item, which I will provide a brief description of in a moment, but at first I'd like DCS to introduce themselves.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Linda Jewell. I'm the Assistant Director of Information Technology for the Department of Child Safety.
So, in an effort to be open and transparent about the Child Replacement Project, also known as Guardian, DCS has requested to brief ITAC on a regular basis. So currently, as it stands now, they've requested to be on the agenda as a monthly item. That way they can let you know how the project is progressing, where they are in relationship to their plan. So by briefing ITAC regularly, one of the goals is to reduce any confusion as to how the project is going and allow members to ask questions throughout the project just so you can see what's going on. Again, this is an informational briefing only, so there's no voting. When a voting item comes up as RFPs are awarded, we'll definitely let you know. But with that, I'll hand it over to Linda so she can provide the briefing.
Thank you. I apologize, I forgot my glasses, so I'm gonna have to read the same as you.
So you can try mine.
So briefly, the Guardian overview, and Guardian is simply a product that we're naming in order to replace our current system called Childs. The system we are looking for is a platform to solve many problems and to drive the CWIS, which is, I believe, Comprehensive Child Welfare Information System. This replaces the former SACWIS requirement, which was State Automated Child Welfare Information System. Okay, so I have my posse nodding yes. The real difference with that is the SACWIS system was very prescriptive on how you produced the reporting results, how you produced the outcomes of child welfare. So you were limited in how you could build in case management or workflow or really support the child welfare worker. CWIS, on the other hand, tries to take a less prescriptive approach and really focused on the outcomes of what child welfare should be. So with that, we have a procurement strategy, and we'll share that in a little bit down the line. But as we stated last month, we have our first procurement went out the door in June, and those sessions closed at the beginning of July, and we are underway for our RFP evaluations for the mobility solution. I obviously can't give you any details about how that procurement and response is going, but we expect to go to best and final offer sometime in September, I believe, to align with the JLDC ask as well. We also, I believe today, will be releasing the platform RFP, today or tomorrow. You should see that hit the streets. And that platform is really kind of the basis of which of the Guardian product will be built on. And I'll go into that in just a moment. Our cost and funding, ACF approved the 50% match for development and maintenance costs over the life cycle of 8 years. Our timeline, we expect to see some benefits and some results as early as fourth quarter of FY17, when the mobile solution will be implemented. Okay, last month, or at our last meeting, someone had asked how the federal funding went, or how Title IV e-funding. So I wanted to be able to come back and present that information, and basically it depends on the child welfare program that you're in, what you're eligible to draw down. So there's some detail there, and they get copies of this, right? So you can have this slide if you have any questions. You can.
I think the only thing would be when we receive those funds, are there requirements from the federal government that we have to agree to reporting? I don't know what comes with that.
So
I could probably go look them up on the website or whatever to get all that data.
So there's definitely the federal guidelines. So when we stated about the kind of SACWIS requirements or SACWIS systems being very prescriptive, they told us how to do that. That was kind of, then you went through a compliance review and says, does your system do this? Okay, now from an IT perspective, you can draw down these funds. In CWIS, I don't know what the, I'm just calling it CWIS. Jeez, I don't know what it is. Yeah. So in CWIS, you can app, I don't really know how they're going to do that compliance review, and that's under advisement now.
Because I'm thinking, to me, when I think of where you're at, it's, let's just say, I would love the state to fully fund your organization because it's a must-have, instead of trying to grab monies elsewhere, and we're kind of connected to the federal government due to restrictions. So if Senator Schutter, Representative Stevens was here, I would ask them to carry the flag on your behalf to make sure that the state would fully fund you because of what the need is at that. That was really kind of my question.
Chairman, committee member, I would love that to happen.
Well, that's my position. Yeah. If this is a must-have for our state and for our citizens, and you're in it, I'm not saying you're in an easy business, it's a painful business, I think the state should commit to funding the organization 100%. And then the taxpayer, I believe, would be willing to step up to that. Again, that's just my own comment.
Thank you. Last year when we started in the, we did an RFP that went out to build the requirements, figure out what is it that we really need to do. And through some discovery, it quickly became apparent, at least to me, that child welfare was more than just case management. There were a lot of issues plaguing our caseworkers today. We didn't have consistent data models in which we could share data. We didn't have a way to connect with our schools to understand, does the caseworker know if the child's in school, and look at holistically the welfare of children. We didn't have a good way to connect to the courts, to family courts. It's so apparent that the caseworker and the court systems work together. So fundamentally, from a communication and a shared data model, we didn't really have a way to do that. A lot of companies or a lot of mistakes, or I guess misrepresentation, is that child welfare is just case management. And as you can see, child welfare life cycle starts with the intake. Assessments, are they safe? Is it risky? Is there neglect versus abuse? Do I have case management? I understand the workflow. Do we understand how we need to work with our providers? For instance, if we have, if a child is left in the home and they need assistance, and how we monitor those providers, how we pay those providers and pay for assistance for kinship and so forth. And also permanency, because that's the goal and that's the strategic direction of child safety. It's not to remove kids and keep them in foster care, it's to find them permanent situations. We never want a kid in foster care. We never want the numbers to increase. But helping manage the life cycle of a child is really important, and understanding those data models. So that's why you'll see when the platform RFP hits today, it's really addressing how congruous all of those data models can be and how we can expose and share these data models with other entities and build upon these capabilities, the six capabilities of child welfare. So that's what we're looking at for the RFP. So just high level, here's some things that have been done. Again, we completed a feasibility study, which was really around the requirements. And some of these are required for FedMatch approval. So there's the project side of this federal ask. We must do a feasibility study, you know, should you do this kind of situation. A cost-benefit analysis, what kind of return on investment will you get? And then come up with alternatives. What are alternatives? Do we build it? Do we transfer a system? Do we build, do a best of breed? Different kinds of development options. And then after all of that's done, we have to create an implementation plan. And that is an 8-year plan to the feds on our approach on how we mean to solve this issue. It's not necessarily a technical, so we don't go in there with solutions, say, you know, it's Amazon Web Services or it's Azure. We're not saying those brand names. We're saying what our approach should be. Right now we are based on where we are with our funding models, where we are with our procurement strategy and kind of flushing all of those things out, we're refining our roadmap, what our 3 to 4 year build roadmap will be. We're evaluating the 8 mobile solution bids that we received, and we're finalizing our data management assessments solicitations. And what that means is we recognize that if we go and put a mobility solution on our current back-end child system, which is what that will be, and in the meantime, we try to assess what kind of data models, what kind of data will exist on our platform, I have some cleanup and some assessment to do. I have duplicate data, I know that. I have data that's existing in an Access database somewhere. So I have to kind of clean up my data and put some good quality measures in before I take my good clean data and put it in my shiny new system. I really need to do that kind of assessment first. So those tasks can happen in parallel before I build and implement anything on the new. Okay, and then next, like I said, we will go to Mobile Solution Award. We are doing some platform RFP bids. Hopefully those will come back. And our upcoming RFPs plan, so we have an IBMV solution, and this may or may not use an RFP. We may use state contract on that, so I do want to state that not everything will I go to RFP. I'll use a mixture depending on the type of procurement we want to do, whether it's on state contract or staff aug, or, you know, I think we're flexible in that approach as well. And the quality management, so the testing. I have a mobile solution, I have a platform, and now I'm going to build these modules on. I want to interface with other agencies. So technical integration is a big one. And likewise, the quality management piece of that, do I know what to performance test? All of my solutions, one of the requirements is that they're all cloud hosted. I didn't name the cloud hosting piece of that. I left that to the vendor to decide. just throw that out there. And then, but be able to make sure that those pieces integrate together. And if I have performance, figure out which ones I need performance plans. So the whole purpose of that work stream is to really decide, did I build it right, and am I building the right thing? So, okay, I'm so sorry, and we're gonna work on this slide. And I recognize that. So to date, from FY15, or 14, I believe, to the end of FY16, which was June 30th, we've spent $1.4 million, of which $700,000 was covered by the feds, I believe. Yeah. Yes. And that included all of those things that I said that we've done, the IAPD, all of the planning, the requirements, the cost-benefit analysis, and so forth. We came back in June and asked for $300,000. It was $600,000 total. This was to finish the RFPs and finish the planning phase of this project. Like I said, we are moving forward with that. We have the mobility RFPs, we have the platform RFP that should be released today, tomorrow-ish, and the upcoming RFPs or procurement strategies that we've done. And then the pink, peach, whatever the light colored lines in there, though, that is what we intend to ask JLBC members for, the state's portion of that bill. So, and that's for FY 17. Okay, any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Linda, thank you for your work on this. It's been very helpful. Can you just kind of give us an update on the IVMV process and how soon that you think that vendor will be employed and on board?
Sure. So in the IVMV, I'm sorry, Chairman, Mr. Buehler, one of the, for the IVMV, we will not move to RFP for this initial assessment. We have used a state contractor, which I'm citing the SOWs right now. We are looking at a state contractor, the same vendor that we used for separation,
okay,
for the separation project. And we will have our first report in August, at the end of August, ready for, I doubt that it will be ready for the August ITAC, but definitely be ready to share for the September 1. And specifically what we're looking at there is really our procurement approach. Are we on the right track and do we have the right things planned? I can tell you building these capabilities and all the cleanup and the decommissioning of the old and all the things that are going on in this multi-year project is, it's quite an undertaking. And the fact that we're adding in the agile piece to it, meaning that we're building a little bit, kind of making sure we're building the right thing before we decide what we're going to procure and build next. This is also to help support the business process redesign. A lot of the things that we are doing has to support how the child welfare needs to be done now, how it's done now. So for instance, in the mobility solution, one of the reasons why we chose to go with that first is we need to teach our caseworkers how to be mobile. I equate it to when California Highway Patrol went into their mobile and had apps in their cars. At first, they didn't really do anything with the apps in the cars. They still went back to the office and filled out all the paperwork. So just giving a caseworker a tablet does not make them mobile. We have to teach them how to build mobility into their workflow. So we're really looking at being able to use that mobility solution to drive some of that business process redesign as well and support that. So with that said, the IVMV in this initial assessment, are we on the right track? So we're looking forward to a positive report on that.
And then one question for Mr. Chairman. Do you know for these big projects that are like $60 million, what is the average cost for an IVMV consultant? Is that data we have available?
So Mr. Chairman, it is something we have available. Dependent upon how you set up the IVMV contract, they can range, wide ranging, anywhere from $20,000 report and up. I don't want to say what the highest level one is, but I mean, they can get up there depending upon the scope of work and what exactly you're having.
Is that information you could provide to me?
Absolutely.
If possible.
I'd be more than happy to.
I can tell you, I am projecting as the cost for IVMV around three different models, 5%, 7%, and 10%, based on the scope of how many reports I do of the total project. So if my build project is $86 million over 40, it would be $8 million, as high as $8 million, right?
And then if I could, just one last question for me, Mr. Chairman, Linda. So how much does the vendor we choose for the platform dictate the type of modules we will buy in the future? For example, if we chose Microsoft as our platform vendor, would that dictate our cloud purchase or something like that?
Mr. Buehler. That's why we're moving with platform first. So the platform needs to support those. Support those platforms, and they need to provide a hosting environment. What they come back with, and I'm hopeful I have more than one vendor coming back with multiple options in which we can choose. But the ability to integrate, that's why we're picking a platform, so I'm not locked into a specific case management or a specific financial tool. That's the beauty of picking a platform.
Any other questions? Gordon, checking in with you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a couple of questions. The Ms. Jewell, thank you very much for the presentation. It's very well done. I'm curious about the mobile solution. Presumably, this is going to be development work. I mean, there are no apps already in existence that could be applied to this.
Chairman, Mr. Rishon, I'm reluctant to discuss the particulars of the type of responses we've received.
Okay, that's fair.
I can tell you when in the spirit of when we released the mobile RFP, it was we were inviting different types of options, whether it would be an app or a specific platform, not the platform RFP, but a product more or less. So I did not want to limit how somebody would solve my problem. I wanted to open that up for responses. So I can't share with you how they've responded. Hopefully in not next one, but the one after that, I'll come with the solution.
Okay, that's fine. I noticed there's a pretty long O&M tail plan for the mobile app. I don't see a similarly long O&M tail associated with the integrations. As you pointed out, there are a lot of moving parts and different pieces to this. Without getting too technical, despite the fact that this is an IT review, can you talk a little bit about the integration strategy? Are these point-to-point integrations that you're planning, or are you pursuing some sort of bus-type strategy?
So, Chairman, Mr. Rishon, I'm hopeful that the platform will dictate how these integration pieces work. To kind of elaborate on your O&M response about the mobility, all I wanted to show in those kinds of slides, it's not necessarily less of an O&M or longer O&M, which is operations and maintenance, I'm sorry. It was to strictly say when I expect that service transition to happen from build to run. So it was more to align when I would be out of the build phase of that particular work stream or project, and I'm in maintenance mode. And that also dictates the funding I pull down from the feds.
Okay, understood.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so I assume that you'll have to wait until the platform is selected to have a clearer understanding or a clearer picture of the integration strategy.
Chairman, Mr. Bushon, that is correct. I don't want to speculate.
Okay. All right, great. We'll look forward to hearing more about that in a future meeting then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Final discussion? If not, this was an informational item, so we have no reason to have a motion on this. Thank you,
Linda. Thank you.
Okay, our last item is another informational item, which is an approval update from health services. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Basically, what was sent out with the meeting items that I'm going to present really quick is, since the beginning of this calendar year, three pitches have come to ITAC, which were under, which were being, were solicitations, and we could not explain. One, we could not tell you who was going to be awarded, nor the final cost. All of those pitches is a standard, come with a standard condition that you will notify ITAC of who you, which vendor you awarded and the final cost. So as to satisfy those conditions and just kind of give you an update on the three projects, we threw together a quick presentation so that you can look at what has occurred. So pitch number one, Department of Health Services. So they came with their WIC EBT, so Women, Infants, Children, their electronic benefit transfer project. ITAC approved that pitch on January 27th, 2016. That contract was awarded in February 2016. They selected the vendor custom data processing. So with that, the project description was basically the current EBT system was woefully out of date, paper-based. If you wound up losing your food instrument, which is basically your ability to go purchase those products, so you couldn't replace it. And that serves about approximately 153,000 monthly women, infants, children participants. So with that, after the approval and the award, so the ranges that you saw from the pitch was basically $9.3 to $10 million over the five-year life cycle cost of the project. So the actual final cost for the pitch came in on the just towards the low end at $6.1 million for development costs. And then the $3.3 million for operational costs for the total of $9.4 million for the project for the total five-year life cycle of the project. The second pitch was also Department of Health Services. So they came to the ITAC in March 23rd, 2016, which is where it was approved. That contract was awarded in April 2016. They selected a vendor called LexisNexis Vital Check. So the electronic death registry system, the current one was implemented in 2008, and they used it to track statistics about various causes of injury and mortality on Arizona residents. So they were having failures and performance issues with the project. So when they came here, they presented their information and that was approved. LexisNexis was selected. So their project costs, their development came in between $1 million and $3 million when the pitch was presented, with operational costs of $480,000 up to $1.6 million, for a total range of $1.5 to $4.7 million. So after award, their actual development costs that are projected and were awarded to the, that are going for the project is $1.18 million, with ongoing operational costs of $1.16 million. So the total five-year life cycle cost of the project is $2.35 million. So again, kind of right in the middle there, as far as the costs go and as far as the range. The final pitch that came on was also came in March 23rd, 2016. That was Department of Liquor Licensing Control. They were looking for any licensing solution, and they selected the vendor Computronics. So with that, their current licensing system they used was implemented in 1991. It was very difficult and cautious to maintain. It was out of support. And it was also sort of similar to what you heard with some of the other presentations. It was very difficult to keep up with the requirements of the legislature and the statutes that came forth. So after they awarded the Computronics, so the original development costs were projected between $718,000. And I believe that was actually supposed to be $1.6 million, so I apologize for the error. So between that, it was going to be between $9 and $10 million. So after the award, the development costs were $800,000 even, with ongoing operational costs of $574,000. So ultimately, the development costs came in under the ITAC budget of $1 million, but over the total cost of the five-year project life cycle is projected to be $1.3 million. So those were the three projects that have come since January of this year. So that's for your informational item so that you have that. And with that, I can answer some of your questions, probably not all, but all three projects are underway, in process, and they're currently in green status from DOA's perspective as strategic oversight.
All right, so are there any questions from the committee on this informational item? Gordon?
Nope, I'm good, thank you.
You're good, okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, James. With that, that concludes all the items we have on our agenda today. Our next meeting is planned for August 24th. If there are any final items, I'll probably need to close. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon.